Good afternoon.
Good afternoon and welcome. Thank you for coming in. As with the previous submitter, we've read the original submission, so thank you very much for taking the time to prepare that. But I see you've tabled some extra notes you'd wish to speak to.
Yes, so, we understand. Good afternoon and thank you for having us here today and giving us the opportunity to discuss this submission. We appreciate the effort that Environment Southland and US Commissioners and councillors, especially here today, are putting into this water and land plan, working together to create a sustainable future for Southland. We are Herman and Dinica, and we are owner-operators of a 400-cow farm, self-contained, just south of Invercargill. After many years of intensive farming over in Europe, we made Southland and its grass-based system our home about 16 years ago. We do believe in the future of this grass-based system, where the nutrient cycle is a lot better balanced and has a minimal environmental footprint compared to most dairy operations worldwide.
We will elaborate on a few points we submitted on a little bit further into depth.
Yep.
The other ones are, I hope, clearly stated in the submission,
yep.
But we're happy to answer questions if there are questions on it.
That's good, thank you.
So, the physiographic zones, policy 4 to 12, set in our submissions, Environment Southland has done very well to use soil science and base rules, policies and management on these physiographic zones. We have an issue, some issues that the physiographic zoning is young and maybe certain points debatable science. It therefore needs to be peer-reviewed and stand up to scientific scrutiny. At the farm level, we need workable definitions of zones without the need of costly consultants at the farmer's expense, especially in a case where there are more than one zone found on the same farm or even on the same paddock. Something that hasn't been in our submission, first submission, but that came across later, policy 11, peat wetlands. Peat and wetlands are not necessarily one and the same thing. Not all peat is wetland, and not all wetland is peat. Peat soils across the whole of New Zealand have been farmed successfully for many years. On page 17, it gets I don't know the title anymore exactly, but
yeah.
It says there extensive peat lands. It's mentioned in there as extensive peat lands. So we feel that peat wetlands, it has a negative sound to it, to the word. So we propose to replace the name peat wetlands to peat soils, so it's not treated or thought of as a wetland. Second point, farming activities that affect water quality, policy 16. We have an issue with the wording new dairy farming. It is highly inappropriate to single out one industry. A poorly run farm can be harmful to the environment, no matter what animals or crops are farmed. Solely focusing on dairy farming is actually a big insult to a community that has already done a lot of, taken a lot of initiative and has invested usually on their own account into improvements on the environment. We therefore propose the removal of the discriminating word new dairy farming, to have it removed and change it to intensive farming practice. Another point is we see potential benefit in the discouragement to establish new intensive farming activities in the close proximity of lakes, as the runoff might enter into the lakes, but lagoons and estuaries receive pollutants over a long distance from the whole catchment. Therefore, restricting the establishment of new intensive farming in close proximity of these water bodies is not fixing the problem. It's a typical example of carrying a bucket of water to the sea solution. So we therefore propose the removal of lagoons and estuaries from Appendix Q. Policy 16 refers to Appendix N as a guideline to make management plans. There is a trend that seems to have developed in the last, over the last 10 years, where farmers have been told by the told that a consent application is too complicated for them to comprehend, and strongly pushed for environment has been made for the farmers to use expensive consultants. This is not only an insult to the farming community, as it doesn't achieve much. A farmer that writes his own application and management plan understands and owns the plan. An application and management plan written by a consultant is far more likely to get filed than adhered to. We therefore propose that Environment Southland simplifies the process of by creating and providing templates and structured guidelines for its consent applications and management plans. Most of the things those consultants come and tell Environment Southland knows already. They know the soil types, they know the way systems work, they should know the way systems work, so it's not adding too much. Policy 16 also states farming activities that affect water quality. Where in this plan is there any policy relating to urban activities that affect water quality or industrial activities that affect water quality? Along the New River Estuary, several industries and outlets on the Invercargill wastewater system and stormwater system enter the New River Estuary, all potentially affecting the water quality in this water body. Again, very important solvent industry, economic part of the solvent community, singled out in the Policy 16. We strongly suggest that Environment Solvent makes a bigger effort in addressing single issues, every single issue across the board, and stop singling out one part of the community. If Environment Solvent wants to be taken seriously, that it is truly and honestly committed to improving water quality, as we are, then it should target all contributors equally. Effluent Management Policy 17. We are in support of Policy 17 as long as the design, construction and operation is not controlled by businesses that gain trading advantages from complicated rules and red tape bureaucracy. Sometimes I have the feeling that some engineering outfits are in the same bed as Environment Southland, that they rely too much on certain engineers, and it's not good for the business. Rule 23, intensive winter intensive winter grazing. As stated before, it refers again to Appendix N, a management plan written by the farmer and not a consultant could improve environmental outcomes. Visiting and advising farms regularly on winter grazing practices is more efficient to the environment than the proposed consent system. Field advisors will get a better buy-in than consent compliance staff in an office. Keep it simple and keep room for initiative. Where is the scientific research quantifying the 20 hectares or the 50 hectare rule? Scientifically, does not make any sense, as many small wintering setups will most likely have a bigger negative impact than a few big ones. If we want to improve the environment, we should all be committed to best practice. Education, that's the key. Rule 38 about the animal and vegetative waste. This rule is too restrictive and does not imply environmental benefits. Where is the science to prove animal waste can only be applied every 2 months? It should be perfectly defined, and it is common practice in many other countries to spread a limited amount of slurry from animal housing facilities after every grazing or cut of silage to replace the nutrients taken away by the grazing or the mowing. In this case, using organic fertilizer rather than important chemical fertilizer. We propose that this whole rule becomes based on the best farm practice. Keep it simple and keep room for initiative. Appendix P on page 204, the pond frog test. I've seen all the submissions of the local bodies, their local body councils, they're well against this. And I'm totally against it too, because it's too expensive, it's very impractical. And there should be, it can be compensated to other systems in the setup. So yeah, that's most of it.
So in conclusion, you probably have seen and heard it all by now from the local government bodies with their own political and financial goals who will happily avoid responsibility and tell you they need their pollution to be totally exempt, therefore just accept it. To the baffled and inert old farmer that reads this water and land plan as a condemnation of his lifetime of hard work on his land, working with nature to provide for his family, his animals and his community alike, not quite understanding why we need the change or how all of a sudden he has become responsible for all the dirty water in this province. There's also the huge multi-farm holdings with their own large economic interests and personal financial agendas with access to some great intellectual resources to help them defend their personal interests. And then there's the aging sheep farmer who feels the rug has been pulled from under his feet and all the dairy farmers in between. But rest assured, the one thing, the one and only thing we all have in common as farmers is that we want a sustainable future on the land for many generations to come. So personally, we would like to see that being accomplished by a water and land plan that involves the whole community in Southland. A water and land plan that is simple and straightforward, no bullshit approach. A water and land plan that is more outcome-based than the current rule-based one and has far less communistic approach and leaves more room for entrepreneurship and will encourage innovation. A water and land plan that effectively does what it should have been set out to do, and that is to improve water quality fast, efficient and to great standards by getting all the industries and all the communities in Southland involved. Thank you for your time and your attention. Much appreciated.
Thank you. Let's see if we have questions for you.
I'll catch you quite heavy. I think my point's clear. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good submission. Just probably one little point, and that's in your last page, when you talk about outcome-based, how do you reconcile that with limit setting and maybe people or farmers who aren't performing?
Mm. We sort of feel, we were quite happy with the old system where there was water samples taken and you could actually see how well you were performing, and by those data you could innovate or, you know, think and try to improve it again, because it becomes sort of a pride thing, you know, you want to do better.
The conundrum we have to accommodate is people who don't want to do water samples, and then if they do, they don't want to adjust their systems. What's your advice?
I do believe times are changing, though everybody is starting to pull that same cart, and I hear other farmers commenting how we should not put up with bad practices of a select few.
We recommend that Environment Southland takes a very hard line with people that don't toe the line.
Smack the naughty people.
Yes.
Everybody can have an accident, but
an accident,
there is obviously people out there that even we don't like to see being there, so.
We have some issues with certain farmers. We cringe when we drive past them and say, this shouldn't be allowed. So all the people in the community see that too. So if somebody is not doing best practice, I don't have an issue with getting them pulled up. Yes, that's right.
The message should have reached everybody by now.
So
by
now, I think times are changing. I think we all be very happy that if we do our best for the environment, we expect the say from our neighbours or from everybody else in the community.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Good afternoon. Good afternoon. You're a dairy farming down in the Awa River area.
Yeah.
Can you describe where your farm is?
Collier Road, just behind Balance, the fertiliser works.
So what's the physiographics accredited to your...
Part is...
peat soils.
Part is peat soils and the other one is
peat wetlands called by you guys.
The lignite marine. Majority is lignite marine, and there is a part in the corner. It's not on there yet.
So you're wanting to have the term peat soils replace...
Peat wetlands.
Peat wetlands, because some developed peats are not wetlands anymore, any longer. A lot of work for many, many, many years have gone into it, and it's become actually farmable.
In majority, I agree with the line where the peat and lignite marine
physiographics
on it. But there is an area in there that it's actually...
Yeah, one paddock is debatable.
A couple of paddocks, it's debatable. Mm. So, what rules would we have to view there? Because some paddocks have patches of peat in there, whereas the rest of the paddock is perfectly fine. It's very hard working.
I mean, it's really great you guys have done this effort and put some scientific thought and not just, you know, chucked something on paper, but it is debatable on a smaller scale.
So what are the drainage systems you use on peat soils or peat wetlands?
Open ditches, and then from there on we've got tiles and overflows. The old ones are very shallow, the newer ones, they're a little deeper, it's a bigger area, but it don't seem to affect the peat bites in its own.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, you've made submissions on the pond drop test, and you suggest there should be alternatives. Can you elaborate a bit on that?
When we built our pond, six, seven years ago now, the engineer that was designing it came up with a pond, just a hole in the ground with a bank around it, and we were going to put a liner in. And then we recommended to put underground drainage in it, and I've heard that it's been taken on board more recently. So there is a drainage system underneath the pond that runs into an open ditch, because we have to get the water table low.
But before it runs into an open ditch, we've got
an inspection port. If anything goes wrong with the pond, we can keep it at
so
the ditch.
So it doesn't go to the ditch. And so we can inspect the water.
And it's the outlet is at the position where we drive past 10 times a day. So we should see very quickly something goes wrong. So we have inspection ports, so we can take a water test, a water sample, and say if there is a leakage or not. A lined pond needs to have some damage from maybe animals or from machinery before it should leak. Those seals and the product is guaranteed for at least 20 years old, for 20 years. So there are other systems. In our system, we cannot do a pond drop test because we need to have no wind for 48 hours. We need to have the pond at 3/4 capacity. And we are not allowed to add anything in or pump anything out of it. Our system is not set up to not pump anything in there. Every day it gets what comes of the cowshed yard goes into the pond. So if we're going to have to set up a special system, an extra pump or an irrigator, so we can do that test, it doesn't make sense. There are better systems than a pond drop test.
Okay, thanks.
All right.
Just got one matter I wanted to ask you about from your original submission. Do you have a copy of that here with you?
Yes.
It's from page 5. To Rule 23, monitoring rules outcome based. I was just wondering if you could clarify for me what you mean by that.
Can you repeat the rule?
Yes, on my copy of your submission, it's in relation to Rule 23.
Okay, next page.
It's on page 5 of the submission.
Yep.
It's the top right-hand corner, and it says make wintering rules outcome-based.
Yep.
And I just wonder if you could clarify what you mean by that.
If there is no visual effect on the environment, no runoff, the cows are back-fenced, the water trough is not on the other end of the paddock, so the cows have to go the whole way through the paddock. The gullies are fenced off. It doesn't look like there is any damage done to the environment. That's a positive outcome to me. So it might mean that we need some environment salvage staff to come and have a look. And quite often it would be better if they come a look before we start wintering instead of during winter. Just to say, if the setup is right, would we expect any problems with this system, or can we be very confident that unless there was a big downpour of rain, we shouldn't get any runoff from these paddocks? That's our idea of outcome based.
Yeah, no, that's very good. Thanks for clarifying that. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now the next submitter.